Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
This episode of EU Startups Podcast is brought to you by Vonta. Whether you're starting or scaling your company's security program, demonstrating top-notch security practices and establishing trust is more important than ever. Vonta automates compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more, saving you time and money while helping you build customer trust. Plus, you can streamline security reviews by automating questionnaires and demonstrating your security posture with a customer-facing trust center, all powered by Vonta AI. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora use Vonta to manage risk and prove security in real time. Get a special offer of $1,000 off at vonta.com/EU Startups. That's vonta.com/EU Startups.
Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups podcast. My guest today is the one and only Tony Jamus, the CEO and co-founder of Oyster, a unicorn and hypergrowth company that empowers companies to hire, pay and take care for team members globally. Over the last years, Tony has raised over $230 million for Oyster, grown the team to over 600 plus people across 60 countries, grown their payment volume to emerging economies by 86%, increased compensation and benefits access for workers in emerging countries, helped over 4,000 people get certified on remote ready, achieved B Corp status, and build in public to show how they work remotely. Everyone, give it up for Tony Jamus. Tony, it's such a pleasure to have you on the show.
It's a pleasure for me to be here, and hello, everybody.
Awesome. Tony, let's dive right into it. Can you share your personal journey from, I know you're open about it, so I'm going to ask. So can you share your personal journey from experiencing burnout after exiting Nexmo to funding Oyster? What insights did you gain during your retreat and how did it redefine your approach to leadership?
So my first company I started was 14 years ago. Mm-hmm. This company was called Nexmo, was an API business for building communication applications. Yeah. I grew that rapidly in 5 years. We reached 100 million of revenues. I took it public after 5 years by merging with a company on the New York Stock Exchange, mm-hmm. Which led to its acquisition by Ericsson for over $6 billion. And then when I finished this experience, I took some time off to really focus on my mental health, mm-hmm. Because during that phase, I was probably in constant burnout mode, and my coach at that time, after we finished this business, told me, his name was Pascal, he told me, you could have achieved the same level of success and maybe more by taxing yourself less and taxing others around you less. And that resonated with me, and I went on this journey to understand, how can this be possible? So I did a lot of what I call inner work during that year, essentially looking inside of me, understanding my reactivity. And it turned out that I had this thing called PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, which is a heightened sensitivity to fear. I would see fear everywhere, and I would react to that fear by creating protective mechanism for myself and for my business, which, by the way, is a great skill to have as an entrepreneur. But if you do it in the long run, you essentially burn out and you burn people around you. Because when you're reactive, other people around you become also reactive. Right. And it's totally unnecessary. So at the end of that year, I did a retreat with my therapist, where the goal of that retreat was to understand my purpose. And that led me the next day after I finished that retreat and went and incorporated Oyster, my new business. That was in November 2019, as Oyster as a mission-driven company. As you said, we are on a mission to reduce brain drain, reverse inequality, and get people jobs especially in an emerging economy that they would not have otherwise. And why I did that, because I'm originally from Lebanon. I had to leave my home country in my teen years for better economical opportunity in the West. And it was a very challenging process to leave my home country, my land, my community. And I felt that I did not want other people to go through that painful process I went through. So through that consciousness expansion process in the retreat, I realized that I could put my skills or my gifts of leadership, of vision, of experience building high growth technology company in the service of a mission that I care deeply about. And that has transformed my leadership style, have transformed how I relate to myself, and I start leading with more empathy, with less reactivity, and what I call today more sustainable human-centric approach to building organizations and building teams.
Amazing, Tony. Love the journey. Thanks for sharing. Speaking of mental well-being, what's the most effective mental well-being initiative at Oyster currently? You know, like in a fast-paced startup, how do you actually ensure it's not just another buzzword, but, you know, like how do you actively prevent people from having a burnout?
Yeah, so there's two components of that. One is you have to have something principles of how you want to reduce the unnecessary stressors of business on people. Yeah. Life is already challenging. Why work has to make life more challenging? So work has to at least not hurt people. And so how we do that is by designing a work experience that makes people have a high degree of flexibility and freedom and sense of mastery of their life. So we are a fully distributed company. We are 600 people distributed in 70 countries. We default to working remotely using asynchronous ways. What does it mean? It means concretely, like you don't have to be always in live meetings all the time. So you can work on your own, process any emotions you have. Let's say you have bad news, you wanna process that reactivity, and then you go and work with your team, pretty much with less reactivity and more presence. And that flexibility gives people, as we said, more control over their life. If they wanna 2 p.m. in the afternoon, they wanna go to the gym, they can do that. If they wanna pick up their children from school, they can do that without feeling guilty. And without compromising on their success. It's critical. We want people to grow, to succeed, while having this flexible way of working. So that's number one, is creating this environment that is flexible, that is also safe. So we encourage people to take risks, to make mistakes, and not fear what's the consequences of that. But that's not enough. That's like necessary condition, but not sufficient. Because people sometimes will burn out. You know, there's a lot of stressors happening in the world right now. There's geopolitical crisis, there's environmental issues, there's economical issues. So how do you create a shield and a supporting environment for people to feel seen and heard and safe? So we have a mental health channel in the business where people anonymously or not come and share their issues, and you have people from the Oyster community coming and supporting them. We have a therapist. Everyone has, as part of the benefit, they have access to a therapist. And as part of the onboarding process, we train people how they can take care of themselves as a remote worker, how they can deal with isolation, how they can deal with burnout. I would say what I've been practicing recently is increasing the level of awareness of my direct report. So when I do my one-to-one with my team, the first thing I start with is checking in on them. And I have this framework where we look at the feelings that are in the box of burnout, such as I feel hopeless, I feel overworked, and all of these feelings. And then we look at other areas. Okay, what does it take you to move into a recovery mode or a high performance mode? And I don't have to fix anything. Here it's just about raising the level of awareness of my leaders to where they are right now.
Love it. Tony, you also mentioned sustainable leadership. How do you define sustainable leadership, and how do you actually practice sustainable leadership daily?
Yeah, so what sustainable leadership is that you have first to have to sustain yourself as a leader so that others can have the permission to do that for themselves. So how do I practice this? I practice this by, I think the foundation of that is to create space for myself to recover, to remain balanced. I increase my level of sensitivity to what I'm feeling, and therefore I don't bring that to work. I clean myself from any reactivity before coming into work, joining a Zoom call, let's say. Sustainability is about not having enough time to recover. It's energy management. So for instance, on Friday, we call it Focus Friday at Oyster, where we don't have internal meetings. And that enables me to catch up on the week and make sure when I go into the weekend, I don't have to open my laptop or answer a Slack message. Because if I do that, if I answer a Slack message on the weekend or at odd hours, my team will feel that they have to do the same. So I'm protecting them from that. Sustainable leadership is also about how you relate to yourself and therefore how you relate to others. So I work on, this is what inner work is. Inner work is you shift how you relate to yourself. I don't want to look at myself and blame myself. I don't want to have negative thoughts about myself. I should do this. I'm not good enough. All these thoughts have to disappear. And since I start believing in myself and I sustain myself, I start believing in others. And I start giving room for others to expand and bring their true self to work and grow as human being and increase their impact and their potential.
Amazing. So sustainable leadership, of course, starts within yourself. Can you share a time when, you know, leading with empathy made a difference at Oyster? And have you ever faced, you know, situations where empathy seems to clash with business decisions?
Yeah. So here's a recent example. I'm working with one of my team members on how they can detach their self-worth from the results. So typically, especially in highly powered situations or positions, leaders tend to fuse their self-worth with the success of the business, the numbers. And they become reactive. They start hurting themselves. They go into this fight or flight response, and that propagate across the organization. So instead of being reactive to the reactivity of my leader, instead, what I do is I go into full support mode, and I build a system for them to, and a space for them to detach their self-worth from the result, and I remind them of their self-worth. And I give this absolute commitment to their success. So that's an example of how I lead with empathy. Although the result might not be great, but the human being is still amazing, right? Is still loved, is still worthy of my support and of my attention and of my care. So the second part of the question is, does it conflict being an empathic leader and being highly powered, financially driven leader? It does not. It's actually it's a different dimension. It's a complementary dimension. You can be extremely successful. You can be extremely driven. You can be extremely ambitious. And at the same time, you can drive these human-centric behaviors. I like to use this image of the one of the spiritual images or concept I have is the eagle versus the condor. These are two energetic systems that I turn on and off depending on the situation. So what is the eagle? The eagle is this predator. The eagle kills to eat. The eagle is a flight and fight mode. He flies very fast, uses a lot of energy. the eagle. So I use that mode when there's a crisis, when there's something urgent, when it's about beating the competition, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. But that mode, if I'm in that mode for too long, I burn out and I burn people around me. So I create awareness to shift into the condor mode. The condor mode is, the condor is actually fly higher than the eagle with less mm-hmm. energy, using the airstream. So less is more efficient, has mm-hmm. bigger vision, and is much more nurturing. The condor has one child every 2 years, versus mm-hmm. the eagle has like five children every year. He or she is more nurturing. So when there's an internal human related challenge, I put my condor energy system, mm-hmm. and this ability to shift your energy system based on the context and the situation you're in is actually create more success than if you're stuck in one mode. Does that make mm-hmm. sense?
That makes perfect sense, Tony. And it's great to hear that, you know, business and empathy, like they're just on the same team. Don't need to clash with each other. And actually achieving, like being hyper ambitious and achieving huge goals in life has to go like in pair with just being nice and just staying nice and taking care of people. Tony, how, like, you're CEO of 600 plus people company. How do you create a culture? I know that you do, because we talked about it. How do you create a culture where saying no to CEO is encouraged? And what do you, you know, why do you believe this is crucial for a company's success? And has this approach ever backfired or created any tension?
Yeah, that was challenging for me to go through that, because you know, CEOs are full of ideas.
Yeah.
And there's also this expectation or perception from people when they join an organization that a CEO is like the biggest decision maker, the only decision maker,
and
his or her word has to be executed right away, right? Because everything this CEO would ask is in a sense of urgency. Mm-hmm. And that becomes very taxing for people. Yeah. And actually, if the CEO is in brainstorm mode and people think mm-hmm. that this is required to execute right now, and it continues for a long time, it leads to burnout in people and loss of trust.
Yeah.
So there's two things I do to do that. First is I remind people that my time horizon is not the next 6 months, in the mm-hmm. next 2 years. So always remind them when I say something, is it's a brainstorm for the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Now, if I need something to be done right away, I do specifically mention that it has to be done right away. Mm-hmm. Secondly, is to train people to say no to the CEO. Mm-hmm. And when my VP marketing joined us, Fabrice, he created this exercise where he interviewed me in public across a number of teams, and we practiced saying no to the CEO in front of mm-hmm. everybody. And he, why this is important, because people need to see that mm-hmm. if they say no to me, I'm not going to judge them. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to think negatively about them. And our relationship remains the same, if not better, right? To engage in this challenge of conversation. So it's about training the people's nervous system that it's okay to say no to the CEO.
Right.
And the CEO is not gonna, it's not a lion who's gonna come and eat you if you say no to them, right? At the contrary, the CEO, at least me, mm-hmm. I wanna see you grow and expand and bring to the organization everything, all your skills and gifts. And that most of the time might require you to say no to the CEO.
Mm. Love it.
And I also want to say that if I feel like I am rushed to mm-hmm. to intervene and create an idea, I tend to reflect first. So, okay, well, I feel like, again, as we said, I increase my level of sensitivity. So mm-hmm. if I feel that I'm urged, I'm reactive, I have to say something, I just go write it down instead of saying it, and I keep it on the side. Maybe I'll say it in the future, but it doesn't have to be in the moment.
Mm. Yeah, because in the moment, it can be like too emotionally driven. So, makes sense.
So that's why it's a skill of developing bricks, executive bricks.
Yeah.
Like the mind, our mind is like a Ferrari with a bicycle brakes.
Mm.
So we have to upgrade the brakes of the machine.
Mm.
We have to get ceramic brakes for the Ferrari and be able to be skilled in using them.
Yeah. Tony, scaling to over 600 people across 6+ countries is a big deal. What was your most expensive fuck up while scaling Oyster, and how did you manage it?
Yeah, so the most expensive fuck up was pretty expensive because in the first 2 years of the company, we started this business in January 2020, and the pandemic was a launchpad for this business. Mm. Like everybody wanted our stuff, but right. We didn't have a product. So we went and we hired a lot of people, and we thought that interest rates is going to remain low forever. Mm. And then that means that we're going to become a 10,000 people company in no time. Yeah. So I went and built an organization and a leadership structure that enabled us to get to 10,000 people company. But then the market shifted overnight. Mm. So I had to back off from that strategy of growth at all costs to move into an efficient growth strategy. And that was pretty costly. It was pretty costly because we had to do two rounds of reorganizations last year. I had to let go some of my dear colleagues that I value them so much.
It's always hard.
And I was hoping, it was always hard to do so. And that taught me to develop the financial controls of the machine more strongly and more accurately to be able to steer the machine in a way that is not uncontrollable, right? So I learned the necessity of having fine financial controls as we grow the business.
Tony, remote work sounds great. Right? Like all the benefits that come.
It is great.
It is great. But actually, what are the hardest parts that no one talks about? Like how companies can, effectively manage and support a fully remote team? And maybe a follow-up question to that. What's your boldest prediction for the future of remote work?
Yeah. So look, remote work done well is better for business, better for people, and better for the planet. But done well is hard. It is hard. You have to really commit on it from the top. You have to develop this operating model that default to asynchronous way of collaboration and communication. And you have to train people on it, and you have to commit for it from the top, as we said. Now, even though if you do it really well, as we do at Oyster, there's still some significant challenges into it, which is around feeling isolated. I live in the island of Cyprus. I'm the only employee in the island of Cyprus. Now, remote work enabled me to live where I want to live, near the beach, amazing lifestyle. But sometimes I feel lonely, and I feel disconnected from my team. So therefore, and it's not only me, I think that's a shared feeling of isolation of many remote workers. So which means that you have to look at your part of your job is to deal with that sense of isolation, whether in your organization. So frequently develop social connection with your teams. At Oyster, we have certain tools and framework that enable us to do so. You have to think about meeting in person on a regular basis. In my team, we meet twice a year. But you also have to find new sources of socialization that is outside of work. That's what remote work gives us as an opportunity, because now we're not stuck in an office. So we have the opportunity to socialize with our local community. We have the opportunity to socialize with our families. And that has opened up for me that opportunity. And I have to say, The fact that I'm alone in a remote island also enabled me to be more appreciative of my solo time with myself. Mm. And that has played an important role in the improvement of my mental health, because if I'm on my own,
right?
What?
To be comfortable just by yourself, staying with yourself.
Yeah, like exactly. If I don't like to be with myself, that means that I don't like myself. So how can I like myself more and more? How can I be more caring, loving to myself, more compassionate to myself? How can I desire myself? I call this self-harmony framework. Mm. How can I be grateful to myself? How can I develop authentic self-expression that supports my mental health? I mean, part of being on podcast is this authentic self-expression, right? Sharing my true voice with the world. And that's, for me, is a foundation for mental health, is how we relate to ourselves has to be positive. Because if we relate to ourselves positively, then we can relate to others positively as well.
100%, Tony. So at the beginning of this conversation, we mentioned that, you know, how Oyster empowers emerging economies. So you have been focusing on emerging countries. What's been the impact of this initiative, and why is it so important for the future of work and for you personally?
Yeah, so let's start with why this is important for the world. And to explain that, we have to look at the macro environment. There are 85 million jobs going unfulfilled in the West, according to Korn Ferry. That's 8.5 trillion economical loss, roughly three times the economy of France. But at the same time, we have over a billion knowledge workers coming into the workforce in the next 10 years, mostly from emerging economies. So there is no doubt that the world has to adopt global employment to seize that growth opportunity. And this is important for the world, because one of the major challenges we're facing in the world is inequality. The system we created is great. It increases our level of well-being, our lifestyle. We can buy things today that we could never imagine 100 years ago. Think about your electrical toothbrush. Just a simple example, right? I mean, 100 years ago, no matter how much money you can have, you might have tooth issues, right, and have pain. But the side effect of that system is inequality, and that inequality is growing in many countries, and that's why we have emerged versus emerging economies. And how emerging economies sustain themselves is through foreign direct investment, is money coming from the rich countries to the less rich countries. So by unlocking global employment and making global hiring as easy as local hiring, we can remove the barriers from in front of companies to tap into the global talent pool. And when you hire somebody in an emerging economy, let's say in Nigeria or in Argentina, and name any of these emerging economies, then you're paying them more than they would get locally. For you, it's still two times, three times more cost effective than hiring a developer in Silicon Valley, let's say. Then you're contributing to the development of these economies. You're sending, instead of that person emigrate and leave that country, this is called brain drain. The number one reason why emerging economies remain emerging, because they're losing their best talent to the West. So if these people remain in their communities and they get paid full salaries in that currency, in the local, in hard currencies, then we have a clear shot of reducing and even reversing inequality in the world.
Amazing. Tony, this sounds like a great mission, by the way. Tell me.
Yeah, I just want to tell you what Oyster does here, right? So this is kind of why. This is why. So Oyster, and every year we publish our impact report. In the last couple of years, we've grown our volume of team members that we employ for our customer in emerging economy from 30 to 40%. We send hundreds of millions of dollars of foreign direct investment in the form of salaries and taxes into emerging economies every year. We these team members in emerging economies record a higher level of access to employment, a higher salary, a mm-hmm. higher ability to take care of their families. Their desire to leave their home country has dropped. Right? Yeah. So this is the impact we're doing on these people and on their communities. And we're just getting started. We are in our year 3 of operation. Uh-huh. What's going to happen when we are in year 30 of our right. operations, right?
Amazing. Tony, so as I was saying, this sounds like an amazing mission. So I wanted to ask you, mission versus growth. How do you keep yeah. Oyster mission-driven, amidst rapid growth? And what advice would you give to, other entrepreneurs wanting to stay real to their mission?
Yeah, so before starting Oyster, I wanted mm-hmm. to design a business model that create collinearity between our financial success and our impact. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what you've done here at Oyster. The more we grow our top line, the more we grow our impact, because our yield is 40% today, but 30% a couple of years ago of team members employed in the emerging economy, now it's 40%. And we can continue to grow that. So the more we grow our top line, the more we deliver impact. So there is total alignment between our growth and our mission impact. Now this is not enough. You have to design your product roadmap and your goals around the mission as well. So mm-hmm. when you launch a new product, it is specifically designed to enable cross-border employment. Some of our rivals, they don't do that. They're just using any opportunity they can see. They are becoming multi-purpose platform. Yeah. They are helping companies in the US hire people and employ them in the US, for instance, yeah. right? So we are very clear of why we're here, and that gives us clarity around our product roadmap and why we're here, and that supports mm-hmm. our success and our growth. So it's not only that. Also, because we are a mission-driven company, we can attract the best talent in the world. People that joined us, they're mm-hmm. not here just for the paycheck. They can get any job anywhere. Mm-hmm. They are here because they want to feel fulfilled. They want to feel connected to the mission. They want to work on something meaningful for them that is more than just making money.
I love it. Tony, another thing that I really like about you and Oyster is that you've been building in public. You've been really like transparent about what you're doing and how you're doing it. What's the biggest benefit and, also the challenge maybe of building Oyster transparently? And what lessons have you learned from building in public?
Yeah, there's a couple of benefits of building in public. Number one is you become a talent magnet. People can see the insides of the organization, how we operate, why we do what we do, and we attract people. We received in the last few years on a monthly basis, on average, more than 10,000 job applicants per month. Mm. So we become this talent magnet. And the second benefit is that our impact goes beyond Oyster mm-hmm. Because we want Oyster to be a role model. It's a laboratory of a new way of leading and building business in the world that is more mission-driven, human-centric. And we want more companies to be like Oyster so that we can multiply our impact in this world. And some of the drawbacks of that is, well, you put yourself out there yeah. and you're going to be open for criticism. Yeah. Some people will look at what you're saying, and inside of the company, things might not go in the same direction.
Yeah.
You have some conflicts because, hey, you're portraying what the ideal scenario is, but mm-hmm. the reality is always slightly different, and it's always a work in progress, right? So that's a risk I'm willing to take, by the way, because the benefits of infusing the Oyster model into the world has more benefit than drawbacks.
Got it, Tony. And actually building in public and being kind of exposed to all this criticism, like also the way how you communicate this, even if you communicate like the ideal version of how it should be, or you are like your pursuit is to like reach this highest, most like the highest quality version of things that you're doing, obviously like life will happen, right? There will be different challenges on the way, that reality might turn out different, but the pursuit to actually get there will always take you higher and better than if you just, you know, kind of agreed on status quo and not try to do anything about it. So,
yes.
Yeah. Maybe this is going to be a last one, actually. And I've been loving this interview so much and having you on the show. I could talk to you for hours and listen to your insights and like what your stories and journey, what you got to share. But Tony, let's talk about your ideal leadership retreat. If you were to organize a leadership retreat for other startup founders, let's say, where would it be? What activities would you include, and who would be your dream guest speaker to open with?
That's a great question. So actually, we're doing one in September. We're going to do one in Barcelona. So we picked Barcelona because it's easy to access for both my US colleagues and my European colleagues. Uh-huh. We didn't want to be in a city. So we are 1 hour away from the city in nature. These are very special moments where we want to connect with each others, and we don't want to be in an urban area where we're like so solicited by all these marketing messages and restaurants. And so there are going to be some team building activities that we're going to do. Obviously we have an agenda for work that we want to achieve, and that agenda is going to be around the strategy for the company for the next 2 years. And I'd like to include some activities such as breathing exercises together, like group breathing exercises, so we can sync our nervous system but also expand our consciousness as leaders and see the bigger picture of why you're here. Because in the day-to-day you're caught into like quarterly goals and numbers, that we want to go beyond that. Yeah. We want to strengthen what brings us together, the mission and this commitment to making a positive change in the world. Mm.
Sounds amazing, Tony. Can't wait for you to come to Barcelona, because I really want to meet you in person again and spend some time together before you go on your retreat. And thanks so much for joining me on the show. It's been so lovely to have you here. I think people love this episode. I hope they will. I know they will. Thanks so much for your time, and I hope to see you soon and talk to you soon, Tony.
Thank you, Marcel. See you soon.